The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And today I'd like to talk about anatta. 2 weeks ago I talked about anicca, impermanence, which is one of the three characteristics of existence. And the third one being anatta, or not self, and the second one being dukkha, often translated as suffering. And Don touched, I believe, on dukkha a little bit last week. And so today I'd like to take a deeper look at the third characteristic of existence, anatta. And like I said, it's often translated as not self. But sometimes it's also translated as uncontrollability. Like there's not this everlasting self that controls our existence. But I'll nuance that a little bit in this talk. And there is usually some confusion around this subject. And I think that might have to do with a few different factors. One of those factors being that anatta is something that is not so easy to understand intellectually. We will understand it through insight. So over the course of our practice, when we practice, we might get insights into anatta, smaller ones and bigger ones. So it is something that we need to experience for ourselves. In contrast, it's for most of us pretty easy to understand anicca, impermanence. We can all see that things change. That's pretty easy to understand. And it's for most of us also pretty easy to understand dukkha, the second characteristic. It's often translated as suffering, but that doesn't really capture the meaning. The Buddha said all conditioned experience is dukkha. But then the question comes up, what about pleasant experiences? Like if we experience a calm meditation or this love we feel for close people, those around us. So that's usually not suffering, right? But still, those experiences are considered dukkha. So to capture the meaning better, other translations that scholars offer are, for example, unsatisfactoriness, unreliability, or stress. And so that helps us to better understand the dukkha aspect of our lives a little bit better. Because all of those aspects are unsatisfactory and unreliable, even pleasant ones. Even pleasant experiences don't give us any lasting happiness. And like the joy or the calmness in our meditation practice is not lasting, or the pleasant taste of ice cream doesn't last, etc. So these things are not something that we can always abide in. It comes and goes. So that's something that we can all kind of see, right? And it's unsatisfactoriness in life. We can somehow tune into that, at least to some degree, most of us. So anicca and dukkha are easier to understand than anatta, the not-self aspect of our lives. All conditioned experience is not self, the Buddha says. And, you know, we might feel like there is this self, right? This unchanging core in the middle of our being, or this control center behind our eyes, controlling our experiences. And we wonder, like, what does that mean then, the not-self aspect that the Buddha is talking about? Like, we feel this self, like, you know, if I lift my arm, I feel like I'm lifting my arm, right? Or I'm listening to this talk. And so this is a pretty familiar experience for most of us. And I think that's kind of also a reason why it might confuse people a little bit about what anatta is. It's not so easy to understand intellectually. And another reason that anatta is sometimes misunderstood, I think, is that the interpretation of anatta being synonymous with there being no self, that might actually not be what the Buddha was describing. Because he was once asked directly by the wanderer Vajragotta, is there a self or is there no self? And he basically stayed silent. He didn't say anything. He just didn't answer the question at all. And this wanderer Vajragotta left without an answer. So then anatta Professor Ananda, the Buddha's cousin and his attendant, was also present. And he asked the Buddha when Vajrakota left, he asked, like, why didn't you answer the question? And the Buddha replied, and this is Tanisaro Bhikkhu's translation. So the Buddha said, if I were to answer that there is a self, that would be conforming with those Brahmins and contemplatives who are exponents of eternalism. And Tanisaro describes that eternalism is the view that there is an eternal, unchanging soul. And then the Buddha says, if I were to answer that there is no self, that would be conforming with those Brahmins and contemplatives who are exponents of annihilationism. And Tanisaro says that's the view that death is the annihilation of consciousness. And then the Buddha added, and if I were to answer that there is no self, bewildered Vajragotha would become even more bewildered. Does the self I used to have now not exist? So that's what the Buddha said. And Tanisaro Bhikkhu, he describes those eternalists and annihilationists as opposite extremes of wrong view. So the Buddha did not teach either of those views. And it seems that if we were to answer the question, if there is a self, we might end up either at this one end of the spectrum, eternalist spectrum, or at this annihilist spectrum, at the other end of the spectrum. And so the Buddha points out that we might get even more bewildered than we already are if we try to answer the question. So this is one of those questions that the Buddha said we can better not answer. Is there a self or is there no self? And of course, many of the Buddha's followers later on over the centuries, up until this time, have answered the question and said, oh, there's no self. but maybe it's better to not answer it, since the Buddha himself did not answer it, and he didn't really affirm the existence of a self, nor denied it. And there's this other sutta, and the Buddha talks about if there's a world or not in the sutta. He says, this world, for the most part, bases its views on two things, on existence and non-existence. To one who with right wisdom sees the arising of the world as it is, the view of non-existence regarding the world does not occur. And to one who with right wisdom sees the cessation of the world as it really is, the view of existence regarding the world does not occur. End quote. So I think that is kind of helpful in a way also for our not-self discussion. Like, I'm not a scholar, but one helpful way to look at anatta might be that, you know, therein sometimes the sense of self arises, and then there's a sense of self. Sometimes there's no sense of self arising, and then there's no sense of self. So we can simply look at it like that. There's a sense of self, or there's no sense of self arising. And this way, we don't have to get all confused about the teaching, because it's just simple. The sense of self is there or it's not there. And you might think like, oh, well, I don't really experience this sense of self not arising. but we might all get little tastes of this, and we might not realize it, but I will explain. Because we can see this sense of self as a skill. From very light kind of feel or no feeling of sense of self to an intense feeling of a sense of self being there. And for example, when we do something that is embarrassing, like once on a retreat, so it's all silent, right, on a retreat, and I dropped my fork in the middle of the quiet dining hall, and so this sound like clink clong bounced through the dining hall, and everyone was kind of startled and looked at me, so I felt very embarrassed, and this sense of self really arose thickly, like, oh, I'm so clumsy, and why did this happen to me? And everyone is looking at me and like really like feeling myself there present. Like other times, you know, we might feel, you know, at ease and present and there's not much going on, you know, and then the sense of self is kind of at bay. It's not that present. So we can really see that difference at different times. And sometimes it's just a subtle background experience, or we might not even notice it at all. And then only when we think about it, like, is there a me or an I, then we like, oh yeah, there's this feeling inside that there's some substantial self happening. While if we don't pay attention to it, it might actually not be there. It is also so that the sense of self really arises when we cling or when defilements are present. So when we, for example, cling to certain things, we want certain things, or we push away certain experiences, then the sense of self arises more pronouncedly. And then part of the illusion of our human existence is that we think that the self has been all this time, from the one moment that we had a pronounced sense of self to the next moment, but in between there might actually be some gaps. It's not like this continuous sense of self stringing all moments of our life together. It's more like just experiences arising and passing away, the sense of self being one of them. So when we start to pay attention to it, it's not as solid as it seemed at first. So this is the notion of the sense of self as kind of like a scale from nothing to very intense sense of self. And that also points to the changing nature of self, the sense of self. It's not so solid. It changes, it intensifies, it lets go. So even this sense of self is subject to change, to anicca, the first characteristic. So this points to that the self is not that this eternal, unchanging thing. It's just an experience, just like any other experience. And all experiences are just changing phenomena. And so in this light, what the Buddha is really pointing to with this teaching on anatta is actually really pragmatic. And the teaching is not about a philosophical debate whether or not there is a self. And the Buddha had our awakening at the forefront of his teachings. And also this anatta teaching is about awakening. And awakening usually starts with looking at what might reduce the dukkha, the unsatisfactoriness in our lives, as well as understanding this dukkha in order to become free of it. And so one way that dukkha arises is through clinging, or that might be the main way, actually. And the teaching on anatta can really help us with this clinging, because we can investigate for ourselves. If a stronger sense of self is present, there is usually a clinging present. The stronger the clinging, the stronger the sense of self usually. It can be clinging in the form of wanting something, identifying with something, or pushing something away. Like, for example, wanting a promotion at work that goes together with this stronger sense of self, clinging to a certain outcome regardless of this promotion. Or a smaller example, wanting it to rain if there's a drought. Or here in Virginia, we have a week ahead of full of rain, maybe not wanting it to rain so much. So all that goes together with this stronger sense of self. I want it to rain, or I don't want it to rain, or I need it to rain. I. And we can also identify with things like, oh, I am a grumpy person, or I am a good meditator, or I'm better at driving than this other person. You know, all these kind of things can come up. These identifications. So you're clearly seeing this sense of self arising. And the cool thing is, like, if you're driving and you're like, oh, this is better than this other person at driving, you know, the next moment you might be you might have already forgotten about this whole other person driving. So, you know, then the sense of self of being a better driver is already passed away, maybe a moment later when your attention has gone to something else. And we can also push away experience, not wanting to feel bad or not wanting to hear an unpleasant sound, etc. And so these are areas to investigate for ourselves. Are we clinging to something? Are we identifying with a certain characteristic or a certain area of life? Or are we pushing experience away? And can we see the sense of self here arising and passing? Like one moment we cling to something, then we let go, and this sense of self might ease up. And sometimes we might feel more wholesome qualities. Qualities like ease or peace or kindness. And then this tendency to self, tendency for selfing, might be less. But the danger, though, there is that, clinging and identifying are very eager to take over again. Like, these peaceful states of mind can easily turn into, oh, look at me being all peaceful. I'm such a peaceful person. You know, so we can look out for those kind of things. Like even the wholesome states of mind, you know, the mind is very readily available to make us into clinging too. So we can be aware of that. And the Buddha says, there is nothing that deserves to be clung to as me or mine. Nothing to deserve, that deserves to be clung to as me or mine. So this clinging to an I being peaceful, or an I being grumpy, or an I wanting this or that, or not wanting this or that, you know, nothing deserves to be clung to, says the Buddha. So this might feel a bit extreme, right? Nothing deserves to be clung to, not even like a healthy earth or a healthy body or our loved ones. Right? The key thing here is, though, that it's not about not caring about the earth or the body or loved ones or whatever it is that we cling to. It's not that we don't care about those things, but what the Buddha points to, that we can do our best not to cling to them, not to hold them too tightly, because that will result in dukkha, unsatisfactoriness. Since we cling to that which is subject to change. So we will inevitably experience the unsatisfactoriness when things change. Like we are not in control of climate change or our health or our loved ones or other things that we cling to. Of course, we can set in place certain conditions that will help with reducing climate change, for example. Maybe we can reduce our footprint, or we can go on marches and stuff like that. Or we can set in place conditions that will lead to a healthy body, eating healthy, exercising and whatnot. But ultimately, we are not in control. Like we can still get sick because we will still grow old and we will die at some point. And so the Buddha says, form being the body, form practitioners is not self. If form were the self, this form would not lend itself to disease. It would be possible to say with regard to form, let this form be thus. Let this form not be thus. But precisely because form is not self, form lends itself to disease, and it is not possible to say with regard to form, let this form be thus, let this form not be thus. The intonation was wrong, but formless, it's possible to say. But precisely because form is not self and form lends itself to disease, it is not possible to say with regard to form, let this form be thus and let it not be thus. And then he continues, what do you think, practitioners? Is form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent dukkha or happiness? And then they said, the audience says, dukkha, venerable sir. Is what is impermanent dukkha and subject to change fit to be regarded thus? This is mine. This I am. This is myself. Then the audience responds, no, venerable sir. End quote. So these are some pointers from the Buddha to let go of this idea that the body is the self. He's saying, like, we can say that the body needs to be a certain way, right? We can say it should be healthy, or it should be a certain shape or form or whatnot. So he points to like letting go of clinging to the body as a self, clinging to the body as controllable, since it will change. It will do its own thing, whether we cling to it or not. And of course, we take care of the body as good as we can. But from that point on, we need to let go. And the first step in letting go is seeing how we cling. Seeing how this clinging is happening. Wanting it to be a certain way. Using our mindfulness practice to observe our minds. To see like, oh, there's clinging happening. And not to make it wrong, but just to see it as it is. And this teaching on anatta can help us to let go, can help us in this process. It's like Tanisaro Biko says. He says, whenever you see yourself identifying with anything, you remind yourself that it's not self, not worth clinging to, not worth calling yourself. This helps you let go of it. When you do this thoroughly enough, it can lead to awakening. In this way, the not-self teaching is an answer, not to the question of whether there is a self, but to the question that the Buddha said lies at the heart of discernment. What, when I do it, will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? And you will find true happiness by letting go. So what it's all about is to look at this path towards long-term welfare and happiness. And this anatta teaching can help us on this path. And that is what the Buddha's teaching is all about. And we can start to investigate for ourselves. Where do we cling to things as being I, me, or mine? And if we start looking at this closely, where is it that we cling to this I, me, or mine? Where do we identify with our experience? Then we might find that it's actually a lot. It's basically most of our experience that we, that this self is starting to get attached to. Self that clings to this experience, whatever it is. And we can be free of this experience in moments. And it's really valuable to see those moments where we don't cling as much, where the sense of self is light or even absent. And really notice that the sense of self is this changing phenomena. It is this kind of scale, it is up and down between intense and light. And we can really be present for the sense of self and see it as just a phenomena arising. And not be too scooped away by it. Like we believe there's this sense of self, but we can see it with lighter eyes, not buying into it as much anymore, but just noticing the arising and the passing away of the sense of self. And I think that this might help us a little bit to work with this Buddha's teaching on anatta. Like not trying to figure out if there is a self or not, but look at like, oh, sometimes the sense of self arises, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it's strong, sometimes it's light, sometimes it's somewhere in between. And so in this way, we can really pragmatically use the teaching on not self as a way to let go of clinging. Because if we see the strong sense of self arising with clinging and the sense of self easing up when there's not so much clinging, we can start to remind ourselves like, oh, wait, when we cling to something, oh, wait, this is not me. This is not mine. This is not myself. This is just experience happening. Even this sense of self is just experience happening. Even this clinging is just experience happening. And if we start to let go of this identification little by little, we gain a greater welfare and happiness in this very life. And there's a ton more to say about this teaching. Like there's the five clinging aggregates, five aggregates of clinging, the five khandhas, where the Buddha also says, don't cling to those as me, mine, or myself. And that deserves a whole other talk. It's like a very interesting teaching as well. So maybe I'll give a talk on that another time, which is very much related to this talk, but it's also very much about not clinging. So that might be interesting for another time. So, but if you still feel a little puzzled by this whole teaching on anatta, on not self, then I want to end with this quote from Sayadaw Uteshaniya. And I think that might give you some hope around this whole teaching, or teachings, Buddhist teachings in general, that might be a little more difficult. So Sayadaw says, "It is helpful to think about the Dhamma, and it's okay if you don't understand things straight away. The Buddha recommended this kind of consideration because you never know when the mind might be in the right state and suddenly you understand." So this is like planting seeds, hearing about these teachings.